You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright
Happy 4th of July weekend, everybody. Welcome to tonight's live broadcast of TPC this Saturday evening, July the 3rd. I'm your host, James Edwards, along with Keith Alexander. We're going to provide the fireworks for you tonight free of charge. If you can allow your mind to drift back to what it must have been like for Francis Scott Key as he wrote the lyrics to the Star Spangled Banner that night at the siege of Fort McHenry, there was no doubt courage and bravery and valor, everything that makes a man a hero, in play there with those revolutionary patriots. But are we as a people better off today because of what happened? It's hard to say. But where does your loyalties lie? Does it lie to a geographical plot of land? Does it lie to a criminally corrupt government? Or does it lie with your people? And to me, it lies with my family, with my people, with my nation, with my race. And the other things are just peripheral window dressings that you would hope would be working in cooperation and congruence with your people. But of course, here in this country, it certainly does not. I bring it up every 4th of July and on most Memorial Days as well. As you know, I can't stand the sight of the federal flag. I won't allow it on my property. Obviously, because of the subjugation of my people under that flag here in the South, but also for everything that it stands for today. What a disgusting symbol. What a disgusting country. What a disgusting government. You separate your nation from your country. They can be one and the same, and they can be different. Here, I celebrate my people, my nation, not so much this country. Michael Perutka wrote something. I'd like to read it, and then we'll let Keith Alexander fire his opening salvo tonight on this, our Independence Day spectacular. Michael Perutka, an attorney in Maryland, wrote some years ago that America was born and America died on the 4th of July. And he talks about the death coming from the historical proximity of the defeat of our American forces at Gettysburg. I like how he puts that. This is what he wrote. On the 4th of July, 1863, after 3 days of brutal and desperate fighting to defend and preserve an American way of life, American soldiers retreated in the rain through Frederick, Maryland, and slipped back across the Potomac River to the relative safety of Virginia. I wonder what Independence Day thoughts went through their minds, the minds of these men, as they marched away from the horrific scene where they and their brethren had sacrificed life and limb for the cause of American independence. What singular faith and courage led them to continue the struggle to defend America from the growing federal tyrant. Though most people in America don't realize it, the Army of Northern Virginia was the last force capable of countermanding the centralized tyranny that had succeeded in undermining the concept of the Constitutional Republic. When Lee lost at Gettysburg, no earthly force remained that could stand against the Washington Leviathan. This growing monster would eventually murder 50 million innocent babies, would send our daughters and sisters along with our sons and brothers off to die stupidly and needlessly in order to satisfy his bloodlust and power, would undermine fatherhood and our families and seek domination over our children, would stare at us from every street corner with its cyclops eyes to make sure we have our seatbelt buckled, would number and monitor us, and would drug our children to make sure they know and grow up without any idea about the knowledge of the true source of law and liberty and government. As I said, most people living in America might not see the connection between the defeat of Lee and Longstreet and Pickett and Armistead at Gettysburg and the death of 50 million babies, but most people in America wouldn't understand in large measure because this is a people in America who have been led to think that America won that war. But the evidence mounts and is more clear to me with each passing day that America lost that war. Keith, this is the 4th of July. Your thoughts on that and where we stand and how you reflect on all of that and then some on 4th of July every year.
Well, thank you, James. I have to admit that I do face the 4th of July with a bit of ambivalence myself. You know, in 1776 until 1781, Americans that were fighting to separate themselves, secede from the British Empire, were called patriots and have been called patriots ever since. Meanwhile, when our ancestors here in the South tried to do exactly the same thing, secede from an imperial government that did not respond or represent them, exactly like their forebears from 1776 until 1781, we were called rebels and have been called rebels and marginalized and vilified and basically treated like second-class citizens ever since.
And you know how it is, of course, Keith. The founding fathers, for lack of a better term, were patriots because they won the war. Our ancestors were traitors because they lost, and that is the only difference.
Yeah, talk about the victors writing the history. And, of course, all of the intellectual heavyweights of the revolutionary generation back in 1776 to 1781 were, for the most part, Southerners. You had John Adams, Samuel Adams, John Jay, some others that were Northerners, but Madison, Jefferson, Washington, Mason, all of those people, particularly the people that contributed to the writing of the U.S. Constitution, were, for the most part, Southerners. And Southerners, by the end of the Civil War, had lost control of the government they created. We have been very fortunate as a nation in that we have not had war visited upon us since the Civil War. The South was the first enemy of the United States that had total war visited upon them. Killing crops, killing livestock, raping women, killing people wantonly, burning towns. For example, in the Civil War, the Southern troops only burned one northern town, Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. On the other hand, 43 were destroyed and burned in Mississippi alone, and that wasn't even a major theater in the war.
And the descendants from those true patriots, the Confederates who fielded the last man who truly died for any sort of freedom in this country, they're the ones who wave the flag the hardest these days. What are you doing? Much more to come tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned.
I really don't want to talk about this, but I will. I'm just so mad. I didn't get asked to the junior prom, and it's raining, which means by the time I get to school, I'm soaking wet. Dad picked me up just after I left, and I was so mad I got out, and he said, wait, your mom said to give you this. I forgot my lunch money, and then I dropped it in the water, and I was late for history, and so at lunchtime, I had to find something on John Stuart Mill, which, of course, our library didn't have, so I had to walk all the way down to the office to call my mom, and she found something on the internet and called me back. And Karen, she wouldn't even help me, and that's a whole nother story. But Dad helped me conjugate nouns or whatever on the way to the swim team workout, and then he read my history paper while I was in the pool, and of course, I forgot the bibliography, so I had to do that with my mother when I got home, and it made me totally forget that I put my jeans in the washer that morning, and I hate it when they sit wet like that all day and smell like mildew, but my mom said she put them in the dryer while I was at the swim team, and, you know, I'm just not gonna go to the prom, no matter who asks me. I just want to stay home with my mom and dad.
Family.
And just hang out.
Isn't it about time?
Unless Dustin asks me.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march. That is why we pray. And that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Yes, of course. I enjoy the opportunity to get together with family and friends every 4th of July and listen to songs like that and shoot fireworks and enjoy a meal together. And we should enjoy any opportunity to come together as brothers and share a time of fellowship. But listen, if you want to find out what it's all about, we've got two great articles for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org that you would do well to read this weekend. Number one, you'll find on Thursday it was posted, America is not a proposition nation. Please read that. Also, what did the founding fathers really believe? This was an opus by Jared Taylor, who really sets the woods on fire with regards to this ridiculous notion that America was founded upon some abstract principles of liberty and equality, what they tell us today. Of course, that's not true. And we will explore this topic in greater detail with the incomparable Sam Dixon. Sam Dixon is going to join the conversation, in fact, in the very next segment. And then he's going to stick around for the second hour when we bring back to the program Jason Kessler. And we're going to be examining the concept of freedom and its application or lack thereof on that fateful day of August 12th, 2017 with Jason Kessler, Sam Dixon, Keith Alexander, and yours truly. So be sure to check out that article, those articles at our website. And Sam, mentioning Sam, he's mentioned this. I mean, yes, Thomas Jefferson wrote the ridiculous thing, all men are created equal. Obviously, context is important when you're thinking about what he wrote there. He obviously was not talking about all men were created equal, or all races, or all sexualities, or gender identities are created equal. That was all in the context of he was equal to King George. This was a brother's quarrel between the Americans and the British, and that's it. And that was all it was, and that was all it ever was.
And the American citizens were the equal of English citizens of the crown. That was their point. Unfortunately, it's like Robert Lansing, who was the Secretary of State under Woodrow Wilson, said about national sovereignty. He said, those words are loaded with dynamite. You could say the same thing about all men were created equals. And Lansing said, what a tragedy for mankind that those words were ever uttered. I could say that now, too, about all men are created equal in the Declaration of Independence, because that has eclipsed everything else that is said, not only in the Declaration of Independence, but also in the United States Constitution. That is what everything has been distilled to. And that's what, you know, and it's not even men. Men now includes women, transsexuals, and however other many gender categories that the left wants to enforce upon us and make us recognize upon pain of losing your livelihood. That's what America is. And again, America is a nation. Like in the Old Testament, a nation was the people. It wasn't a particular piece of land. That piece of land may be associated with the people, but it's like a church. You know, a church isn't the building. It is the congregants that are part of the church.
Great
Same
point.
Thing for a nation.
Well, don't take our word for it, ladies and gentlemen. In this article that I made mention of, written some years ago by Jared Taylor, What Did the Founding Fathers Really Believe? I'm just going to read two short paragraphs and then toss it back to Keith before we add Sam Dixon to this conversation. But this is how Jared starts and ends this incredibly detailed piece, incredibly well-cited piece. Here it goes. Today, the United States, Jared writes, officially takes the position that all races are equal. Our country is also committed legally and morally to the view that race is not a fit criterion for decision-making of any kind, except for promoting diversity, quote-unquote, or for the purpose of redressing past wrongs done by whites to non-whites. Many Americans cite the "all men are created equal" phrase from the Declaration of Independence to support the claim that this view of race was not only inevitable, but was anticipated by the founders. Interestingly, prominent conservative Tea Party favorites like Michelle Bachmann and Glenn Beck have taken this notion a step further and asserted that today's radical racial egalitarianism was the nation's goal from its very first days. Of course, they are badly mistaken. Since the early colonial times and until just a few decades ago, virtually all whites believed race was a fundamental aspect of group and individual identity. They believed people of different races had different temperaments and abilities and built markedly different societies. They believed that only people of European stock could maintain a society in which they would wish to live, and they strongly opposed miscegenation. For more than 300 years, therefore, American policy reflected a consensus on race that was the very opposite of what prevails today. Today's egalitarians are therefore radical dissenters from the traditional American thinking. A conception of America as a nation of people with common values, culture, and heritage is far more faithful to the vision of the founders. And he backs this up with their very own writings and statements. And he quotes really all of the original founding fathers, obviously Jefferson in the proper context, George Washington, James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, on into, well, Abraham Lincoln and what he had to say about race. I mean, of course, it was there was a difference on the opinion of slavery, but even those who were in favor of abolition were all also equally in favor of repatriation. And that's certainly very much different than what we are told now. It goes on, though, into Keith, modern-day contemporaries, or relatively modern-day contemporaries, such as Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, Warren Harding, all the way up to Calvin Coolidge. And then, I mean, what they wrote would make us blush. It would make us look like moderates.
Well, look, let's be honest with it. What it means now is what Jewish power and influence tells it has to mean. We have to consult Jewish power and influence to tell us what our forefathers meant by the founding documents, which is absurd. We know what they meant, and for the most part, throughout most of the tenure of the United States of America, there was no question as to what it meant. And now we have this new and foreign notion or notions foisted upon us, like, for example, the article that you were recommending to our audience, A Proposition Nation. Do you think that anybody among the founding fathers would have endorsed that notion, that we just live according to a set of principles?
Well, the idea that they wrote all of this knowing that we would one day have legalized transgenderism, where men can dress as girls and go into the girls' bathroom and get into the girls' basketball, all of these things that they say. Now, if they're not trying to tear down their statues, they're saying they actually really believe this. Well, if they believe this, why wouldn't they just say
Look,
it?
If they're doing that, then the 13 colonies were an outdoor mental institution, okay? It was...
You mentioned that at supper tonight when we were doing our pre-show prep. If any of these people had these ideas of their modern contemporaries back then, they would have been put in the asylum.
Yeah, under lock
and key.
And
rightly so. And rightly so.
See, nobody believed that. And if you believe that they believe that, then, you know, see me after the show. There's a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you, okay? Nobody with a lick of common sense would believe that. Furthermore, no one with a lick of common sense would really believe that all men are created equal. In fact, Thomas Jefferson, the author of those words in the Declaration of Independence, said in his later in life correspondence with John Adams that in terms of intelligence, appearance, and morals, a more correct statement would be that no two men were ever created equal. You know, and...
Well, no two brothers were created equal, much less people...
No two that, identical twins were created
much
equal.
Less people groups that... experience radically different climates as they continue to develop and form these societies. I mean, obviously, that's not what they meant. And, well, it's clear to anybody who thinks, but of course, we don't have thinking people anymore.
Yeah, no one. The thing is, there's a saying that I like to quote that I found a couple of, about a month ago. If you're too open-minded, your brains will fall out. Nobody should be so open-minded that they really believe that all men were created equal, because the evidence is so contrary to that proposition.
They believe that, but in the original Immigration Acts, they restricted citizenship to white male landowners. I mean, man, they were really mixing the message there,
no,
right?
You know, like I said, what a calamity that Thomas Jefferson never used those words.
Well, they would have done what happened was inevitable, but they used that as a convenient tool.
That's what they hang their hat on.
Anyway, hey, we're going to add Sam Dixon to this conversation. Jason Kessler in the second hour. It's going to be a great show tonight. It's only going to get better. Stay tuned.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News.
I'm Brad Bernards. Massachusetts State Police arrested 11 heavily armed individuals following an hours-long standoff that started at around 4 a.m. off an interstate highway. During a traffic stop early Saturday morning, a group of men carrying rifles and handguns, State Police Colonel Christopher Mason told Boston 25 News that the men have identified themselves as part of a group called Rise of the Moors, a group that does not recognize our laws. Mexico state-owned oil company said Friday it suffered a rupture in an undersea gas pipeline in the Gulf of Mexico.
This was the scene after an undersea gas pipeline ruptured, causing flames to bubble up from beneath the surface. That is unreal. Crews battled the blaze for hours trying to put it out. Ultimately, they did.
Audio courtesy NBC News. This is USA Radio News.
You know, if you feel like you're stuck with a healthcare plan that isn't affordable or you simply don't like it, right now is a great time to switch to MediShare. The typical family saves $500 a month when they join MediShare, and what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to the typical health insurance plan. That's double. So you get a massive network of providers to choose from. You get telehealth services, and MediShare is the most trusted name in healthcare sharing. It's been around for more than 25 years, shared more than $4 billion in healthcare bills. Here's why now really is the time to make the switch too. You can start saving each month, which is huge, but right now they'll waive your joining fee. So you'll save another $170 right off the bat. But again, it's a limited time offer. You got to call now. And it only takes 2 minutes to find out how much you'd save by switching. Here's the number, 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE, 833-34-BIBLE.
Florida officials on Saturday abruptly moved up plans to demolish the remaining part of a Miami-area condo that collapsed June 24th as the threat of a secondary collapse of the damaged structure looms, potentially endangering rescue crews. Meanwhile, officials said the death toll from the collapse increased overnight to 24 victims and 124 people remain missing. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said at a Saturday news conference the state will pay for all costs of the demolition, which he said should take place within 36 hours.
This will protect our search and rescue teams because we don't know when it could fall over. And, of course, with these gusts potentially, you know, that would create a really severe hazard. So our mission is to expedite it as soon as possible. Kevin Guthrie reports to me that once everything is ready to go, that it can be brought down within 36 hours.
This is USA Radio News.
You say you want a revolution.
Indeed. Welcome back, everybody, as we are now joined by the great and good Sam Dixon, who has been listening to the opening remarks of this program. So, Sam, we'll turn it over to you and let you take it any which direction you would like as we begin to set the table for Jason Kessler and the Charlottesville question in the next hour. But feel free to agree, disagree, share with us your musings on this Independence Day weekend.
Well, I think we largely agree. I was going to start off by quoting Rabbi Stephen Wise, who was the number one Jew in America back in the 1920s and 30s and 40s, and a close confidant and advisor to Franklin Roosevelt. And he once told his fellow Jews that we have been Jews for, we've been Americans for 200 years, but we've been Jews for 3,000 years. And that's the right idea. I think we can learn a lot from the Jewish people. They obviously have succeeded when we have failed, and they have succeeded by maintaining their identity, their group loyalty, and their memory. One bad thing about the American Revolution was the way we separated from our ancestors in Great Britain. Obviously, America could not be ruled from London. We were going to inevitably become independent the way Canada has become independent. But it was the equivalent of the difference between a son or a daughter leaving the house to get married and start a family and a son running off to be a skinhead. And America ran off to be a skinhead. Americans we have very little historical awareness of the deep, deep taproots of what we think of as our own system. We go back to our Anglo-Saxon ancestors in Great Britain. The America is not an exceptional country. America is not a new country. America was a New England. And initially, the colonists said they were fighting for the rights of Englishmen. And those rights were things that were well defined in British history. The right to a trial by jury, the right to a lawyer, the right to be secure in one's house from unreasonable searches and seizures by the king. These things went back centuries among Anglo-Saxons. Our Bill of Rights was taken by Jefferson from the Declaration of Rights, which the British Parliament passed, English Parliament, that is, in 1692, when the last king who claimed rule by divine right had been overthrown, and the new king was required to sign and accept the Declaration of Rights. And much of our Bill of Rights just is lifted from that template. You'll never hear that in an American school because the people who manipulate us want to separate us from our ancestors and to separate us from Europe, and they want us to be at loggerheads and antagonistic to our ancestors who came from Europe and to Christian European civilization in general. The talk about British tyranny always irritates me at the 4th of July. The British were the English and the Scots were the freest people on earth in 1776, and so were the American colonists. There was never any British tyranny. King George was the farthest thing in the world from a tyrant. During the upcoming wars to put an end to the French Revolution and the fanatics and crazy homicidal maniacs of the French Revolution, George III became the symbol all over Europe of sanity and governmental restraint. He did that while many of our so-called patriots, like Thomas Paine, were very enthusiastically supporting these bloodthirsty fanatics in Paris. When we celebrate the 4th of July, we should take care to curb the talk of British tyranny and monarchical tyranny, and that we should see ourselves as an extension of Europe rather than something that was born in opposition to Europe. Our enemies have utilized and manipulated us using these themes to get us to engage in this destructive, fratricidal wars against other Europeans. And we need to start thinking in a broader sense about the fact that we have been Europeans for millennia, and we've been Americans for only about 245 years. So that's my spiel.
Well, Sam, this is Keith. Let me ask you this. Where do we go from here? We have who is going to be the avatar, the leader of the white people of the world now? Vladimir Putin? You have any other candidates?
Well, Putin is certainly the most outstanding leader for white people in the world. He is hated by the American system and by the fools in America that believe the system, precisely because he won't allow Russia to be colonized by third world immigrants, and he has reestablished the Russian Orthodox Church. He's ended communism. When Russia was taken over by alien communism, the United States was quite congenial with Russia, as you know, Keith. The Soviet Union was our great glorious ally in World War II. And Franklin Roosevelt confiscated all the belongings, all the property of the Russian Orthodox Church, and gave it to the Soviet Union. Eisenhower was a strong supporter of the Soviet Union in reality, behind the camouflage of the Cold War, and worked with the Soviets to crush the Hungarian Revolution in 1956. Nixon had the great grain trade to give the communists grain. But when communism fell, America became hostile to Russia. As long as it was an anti-Christian, anti-European, anti-white country, America got on with the government of America got on very well with it. But now it's led by real Russians like Putin. We need to remember about Lenin and most of the people that took over Russia. They were not really Russians. Lenin had a better genetic claim to being Russian than most of them, although he was a miniature UN, being a mixture of all kinds of things. But he himself once said, "I spit on Russia." He hated Russia. And Putin certainly is preserving white people and a nation, a real nation, one-sixth of the globe. We should view them as our friends. They're our protectors against the Chinese invading Europe.
An interview, since we sort of segued into this, with Charles Bosman of Russia Insider, who is in Russia as we speak. That's going to be coming up week after next. Next week, we're going to be doing a remote broadcast in South Carolina. So stay tuned for that. And we'll further, we talked about this a little bit with Mark Weber last week with regard to the Putin-Biden summit. It's an interesting question. And, there have been articles written about this dating back to the early days of this century. Is Russia the key to white survival? I mean, we'll find out. But much more to come on this particular program. When we come back after the break, we're going to play a song, a revolutionary American revolutionary song that was introduced to me just yesterday by Sam Dixon himself, and he'll tell us what that song is after the break. But Sam, just with only seconds remaining before the break, I don't know if we're going to have time to really develop this, so just a quick comment will be fine. I couldn't help but notice black malcontented celebrities, chronically malcontented athletes and celebrities, now calling for the American flag itself to be changed. They now have their own black national anthem. They have Juneteenth now to compete with Independence Day. And now the flag itself, the Yankee flag, the federal flag, coming under renewed attack. Is it delicious, or do we lament that?
Oh, no, it's good that they're separating themselves out And they are right. America at heart is a racist nation, as any healthy nation is, as Israel is, as Ireland is, as Russia is. And Sir Francis Scott Key, as you may or may not know, was on the board of directors of the African Colonization Society that sought to repatriate freed Arab, slaves of African origin. They wanted to create a state for them in Africa and separate the races out. I'm amazed that that hasn't come out and that it hasn't been used to get rid of the national anthem. But
Talk, talk about hidden figures.
Well, I tell you what, if it hasn't been mentioned before, now that it's been uttered on the political cesspool by none other than Sam Dixon himself, I'm sure that will be a sticking point. But no, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he would have been in favor of repatriation, but I did not know.
Well, basically, all the abolitionists were up until about the time of the Civil War.
Well, but the fact that the author of Star Spangled Banner.
Not all of them. The emancipationists were, but not the abolitionists.
Touche. Very quickly, we've got to take a break. But yes, with all the attacks that have been levied upon the national anthem, whoa, that's a little nugget right there delivered right here. When we come back, Sam Dixon, we're going to segue into Charlottesville and our next guest. Stay tuned.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt. And there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Back to Sam Dixon here. We're going to play that song in the next hour as we troubleshoot this connection outage. Sam, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Okay, well, listen, while we're working on this, let me ask you, with regards to freedom, you have said this before, do we have too much of it or not enough? even you have quoted the Greek maxim in the past that even virtues when taken to an illogical extreme can become harmful. We have all sorts of freedoms today that we didn't have in the past, but certainly the people in Charlottesville, the good people in Charlottesville, I might add, didn't have the freedom to assemble on the public square. They didn't have the right to obtain a permit, although they did obtain a permit and had it even sanctioned by a judge once again at the 11th hour to peacefully protest or peacefully show their support, I should say. I think that would be more accurate way to put it, peacefully show their protest for one of the greatest Americans, perhaps the greatest American, Robert E. Lee. But, of course, that was all scuttled. They certainly didn't have freedom on that day. So let's talk about freedom. Too much, not enough, particularly within the context of Charlottesville, as we prepare to welcome Jason Kessler in the next hour.
Well, I think we have a lot less freedom than people think we do. It's what Alain de Benoist, the French philosopher, calls a soft form of totalitarianism or tyranny in America. We're told we're free, but because we don't have governmental restrictions per se, we have the First Amendment, and theoretically we have the right to speak our minds. But if you do speak your mind in a private enterprise country like America, you're punished in other ways. You've been punished. I've been punished. I had the Southern Poverty Law Center try to destroy my law practice with a nasty, absolutely false smear that was then distributed to judges for whom I practiced. That's an extreme example, but you can be, your freedom can be curtailed by private enterprise, the same way it can be curtailed by government coercion. You remember as a Southerner, we used to have the term in the South, a company town. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Or do you not? A company town was one of the mill towns where one family owned the mill, and nobody in the town dared criticize the owner of the mill. So it was a company town. Our enemies have now created a company country with things like Facebook, Zuckerman, people like that. And they want a country in which theoretically you're free, but as a practical matter, if you exercise your freedoms, you will be financially destroyed and left destitute. Your children will not be able to go to college and things like that. So I think we need to broaden our ideas and realize that freedom can be threatened by private groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center or the Anti-Defamation League of the B'nai B'rith or the Lincoln Project, which is a group of never-Trumpers in the Republican Party.
Or Google or Twitter.
Hard. Yeah, so these people, we need checks and balances between government and private enterprise. I would like to see a civil rights bill passed prohibiting discrimination based on political belief. That would be a very great thing for us. And I think hotels that refuse to rent rooms to people like us, that should be made against the law. And if we ever get our hoped-for post-American ethnostate, I would be in favor of tremendous curtailment of private property and freedom. I think that the first order of business would be to confiscate the holdings of people like Zuckerberg and others. We could not allow the media to continue to be owned by the white-hating minority racists and white sociopaths that own it now. Those people.
Well,
have,
you know, Sam, it's very interesting because that's exactly what the civil rights did. It changed the landscape where private industry and private business could not have the power to discriminate against black people. Now we need to have the same thing for white
people. Well, this was actually, we're back to full strength now, if you can tell, ladies and gentlemen. But this was actually what I was going to get into with Sam with regards to the concept of freedom. I mean, that we're told to pledge this allegiance to these abstract principles, these abstract concepts of liberty and freedom, which is, of course, ridiculous on its face. But it's become increasingly clear, Sam, that those of yesteryear weren't merely seeking to have equal standing with us. They were seeking that we switch places with them, which has been, of course, what has occurred. And I think, you know, Charlottesville is a great example of that. Is there anything you would like to say along those lines as we get ready for Jason Kessler, how Charlottesville and freedom sort of merge or clash here on Independence Day? And I guess every day, but particularly on Independence Day, it's worth taking a look at.
I think we'll develop with Jason Kessler the real story of how the police chief, the African-American police chief, conspired to violate the constitutional rights of American citizens. But in general, I think there are things more important than freedom. Freedom is a very good thing. I'm not against freedom. But survival is more important than freedom. And there come times in the history of the race in which survival trumps freedom. When the Russians were fighting to overthrow the brutal government of the Mongols that conquered them, it was only a czar, only the Grand Duke of Muscovy, could defeat these people. The idea that you could allow a debating society and people to disagree and states' rights and things that reactionaries in America believe. No, the only hope for the Russian people was a tough guy in the person of Dmitry Donskoy, who is a great figure in our history that we don't know about, average American. But he told the Russians, you will show up and you will bring your men with you and they will be armed and they will stay in this battle and we will fight the Mongols. It wasn't a thing where each little region had its own veto power and people had the right to choose. That's the kind of thing that we're facing now. We're in a fight for our survival. These people hate us. They hate your children. They want us dead. And we see that from things like the New York Times editorial board, which hired this Korean woman who has stated that she looks forward to the day when every white person is dead. And they defended putting her on the editorial board and said that it's understandable that she would feel that way because she's an Asian in an evil, white, racist country like America. Really? I wonder if they would have somebody on who would say that, who had written that he looked forward to the day when every Jew in the world was dead. I kind of think they'd have a different point of view. But this is a gauge of just how much these people hate us. And they hate even the goody-goodies. They hate the normies. They hate the social justice worker warriors. They hate us all. And we're in a fight against these people, and they're revving up the hatred against us among blacks and Hispanics and others. You know, we're in a battle for survival. When you're in an alley and you're fighting for your life, the boxing rules you learned in high school don't apply anymore. All the stuff about not hitting below the belt, stuff like that. No, you're in a fight for survival when you're being attacked by a gang in an alley, and that's where we are. And it may be necessary to curtail freedom for us to survive. Jefferson Davis didn't understand that. I'm hoping that if we do have a chance, that we will be led by somebody like Lincoln and not a Jefferson Davis.
Well, Sam, I think it was Napoleon that said, when your enemy is digging himself into a hole, don't interrupt him. I think that's what the left is doing now by going against all whites, because the good guy, the normies, the normies are all astir and all aflutter because they have been denied their status as good whites. Now all whites are bad mm-hmm. whites, and you know this is mm-hmm. this is a wonderful development for people on our side of this equation.
It certainly is. It's a great thing. I heard Charles Murray being interviewed by a black journalist who apparently is a conservative black, and Murray said the great danger of what's going on now is the terrible danger that white people might actually get an identity. Now, I like a lot of it.
I have to disagree with Mr. Murray.
Well, no.
Exactly what we need. That is, we need a white identity, and the left, like you're saying, Keith, the left is going to create, it's going to finally turn these happy Kmart Target shoppers
maybe into the kind of people their ancestors were. Maybe they'll become Vikings again instead of stockbrokers and lawyers.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, you know, listen, we have spent no short amount of time over the course of the last couple of months. I know we spent a great deal of time on the show we featured, the most recent show during which we featured Kevin McDonald and Jared Taylor. That was back, late May. There is anecdotal evidence that there is a white identity, or at least a stirring of a white consciousness. I mean, we've got a long way to go.
Well, we're like the Panhellenics. We do have a white identity that transcends things like Anglo-Saxon or French or German identity. You know, we are all descended. All the Teutons, the Slavs, the Latins, the Celts. We are all descended from people who, as of 1492. Were what they called duophysitical Christians. That's Christians who believed in the Nicene Creed. We share the same civilization of the paganism of antiquity mixed with Christianity. We are one people divided into nations.
And we deserve the right to live. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, we got to ask the question, what really happened on that fateful day of August 12th, 2017? What has happened since? What can we do to help? We're going to get our answers straight from the source. Sam Dixon is going to stay with us in the second hour when Jason Kessler returns to the TPC. Stay tuned. You know where